drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, Rope Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. At Burn on the board, SP Futures down a buck and a half, NASDAQ Futures down 16. We were down much more last night, and then we were up for a while as war became good and the oil decrease in oil became much more muted, shall we say, muted. And right now we've got, where we have oil, it's only up, was up like $3 or $4. Now it's only up 76 cents. So I think the world is hoping that what happened the other night is a one and done. I think most people are hoping that. I certainly don't want anything more crazy. That maybe Iran will go back in their cave for a while. It's happened a couple other times, so that's what kind of what I'm hoping for. But it may turn out not to be. Let's hope not. You know, who knows about Russia, China? I don't think they're ready to get involved, but it is somewhat of an unusual step. But, you know, that's it's not like we have not done it before. We have. We've had... when Mr. Flanagan comes in, I'm going to kind of talk about, try to talk about it. There's nothing really to talk about. I was talking to a couple of attorney buddies last night, and Jimmy, you can certainly opine in on this. We'll do a little bit of sports report here in a second. I'm curious as to why there's ever an amendment when, you know, some stuff seems to be, you know, an amendment obviously is a big deal. You got to go through all the states, and the states all have to ratify it. Not all, but what's the percentage to me? You get is it 2/3?
I believe so. You have to have 38 states.
Yeah, something like that. And you know, some of the stuff, it seems like they just pass a law. You know, like obviously the 14th Amendment was, everybody felt they needed an amendment. You know, the 5th Amendment, the 1st Amendment, felt they needed an amendment to the Constitution, or I guess the Bill of Rights was actually sort of an addition. But now I'm kind of curious as to when you need an amendment and when you don't, because we have two things in the last, well, the War Powers Act was when, I don't even remember, but where you give the president some discretion, and then the question is how far. And it never was ratified by anybody, and yet the Constitution plainly says only Congress can declare war, at least the last time I read it. I'm not saying this is wrong, I'm just saying it's very difficult to define. You know, then you get a guy like Bush that says, well, it's a war on terror. Well, okay, that never ends. What if it's a war on all bad guys everywhere? You know, well, that never ends. So the question is Congress, did Congress, by this act, by everybody's interpretation, we always know that, you know, some presidents take the interpretation to the extreme. We haven't had a declared war since World War II, right?
That is correct. Korea and Vietnam were actions, not wars.
Grenada
was an action.
Gulf One, Gulf Two. Although I think Bush did get some approval for Gulf One, but I don't think it was a declaration, formal declaration.
No, but he did have a coalition.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it clearly says in Congress that. You know, it only all revenue bills start in the House, and tariffs are to be passed by Congress. So they put some law out there and said, okay, well, you get, how is giving the president a right to do retaliatory tariffs and other stuff, how is that not an amendment? I'm not saying it should be. I'm just asking the question. And then all of a sudden, you get a guy comes in there and says, well, every tariff is retaliatory. Okay, well, fine. Not, and then what do you do with that? Then the Supreme Court may or may not agree. You know, and then all of a sudden you're kind of right. I don't know where you are. So it's not, it's, you know, I'm not doing any criticizing. I'm just asking the question. When does something become, well, why did we ever need an amendment, I guess is my question. If Congress can just pass the law, the president sign it, and the president interpret it however he damn pleases, which is basically what's happened. Which is, in my opinion, again, it doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't have blasted the place. Doesn't mean, time will tell on that. I mean, And, you know, we'll see what kind of reactions are in. In the immortal words of our Secretary of Defense, we're not at war with Iran, we're at war with their nuclear program. I don't know. Now, we can define wars any way we want to. That would, bombing the crap out of somebody, in my mind, is somewhat of a war. But that's, again, it's more of a strict sort of thing. Anyway, Major League Baseball, we'll talk a little bit about the soccer stuff. Jimmy, who's out? Where exactly is this World Cup? Even though most people might think it's actually next year, but here we are the year before and we're already hacking around with it, right?
Yes. Now, the actual World Cup will start next year. It's being hosted by three countries, Canada, United States, and Mexico. Right now, you have sort of like, if it was the NCAA tournament, we are having like the pre-contests to get in. Generally, the big ones are now going to be the regional conference tournaments like COFA, COPA, the European. And right now, basically, people are trying to get enough points to be included in the big dance, so to speak.
Even though they expanded the field, right?
Yes, even though they've expanded the field. I mean, I guess you could say pretty much like North Korea's out of it. They've never been in it, so they're out. But, you know, you have some of the African nations that are trying to get themselves in.
Do we get to the point where it's allegedly like the NCAA, where maybe some of the European teams that don't make it are better than some of the other teams that do make it?
It could be, yes. I mean, you could only have so many teams from Europe. I mean, otherwise, European teams would qualify, and they generally do. I mean, if you look at it, France, Holland, Italy, Germany are always in. Poland is generally in. Denmark is in. Sweden is generally in. England is always in. Then you get like, you know, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. They have...
Well, they don't go in with England?
No, they consider themselves separate in the tournament.
Okay.
Then Luxembourg, you don't know. The Swiss sometimes get in, sometimes they don't. And then obviously in South America, Brazil and Argentina are pretty much locks. Colombia generally does get in.
Out of all three of the host, since it's being hosted by three countries, are all three of the countries in?
I believe that is correct.
Because last time we didn't get in, right? What year didn't we get in? Was it last time?
That was last time, yes. Canada also sometimes is a wild card. Mexico generally does get in.
All right. Well, yeah, Canada. I think it was a couple of years that Canada and us didn't get in, right?
That is correct.
So that's three spots from this area that are in, no matter what.
Correct, because we are the host nations.
Well, they should have like five teams host, then everybody gets in, right?
Well, yes, if you did it that way, that could be correct.
All right, well, let's get over to, do you have any thoughts of who's going to be a big upset that doesn't get in?
No, not really. I mean, usually the big strong countries that have the main input generally do get in. They have enough points. It's really going to be in Asia, the Middle East, and Africa where you're going to have the countries really trying to get in. I mean, you have Cameroon has gotten in, but not gotten in. South Africa gets in, that's where you go because it's like winning a conference tournament.
They're up to 64 teams?
Yes. It's like a conference tournament, Chief.
Right.
If you win your conference, you get an automatic bid. Otherwise, it's going to be on the points that you have, how many wins you have, how many draws you have, because you get 2 points for a win, 1 point for a draw.
All right. Baseball standings in American League. There's been some movement up and down here. In the East, the Yankees are still up top, 2.5 games on the Rays. But they were 3-7 in the last 10 games. And then Red Sox, which are were left for dead were 7-3. So now they're six games behind, but they're over 500, and I'd say they're in the hunt now where they weren't, right? The Orioles are totally out. What, have ever been a team spun around? The Orioles won 100 games last year.
Yeah. They're only 12 out. I mean.
Yeah, but their record is, you know, they're 33. They've got some injuries. They lost a free agent. But they claim that the injuries, when those guys come back, they're still in it. So, you know, we'll see on that. And the Central, the surprising Tigers, they're still way up, even though they've been 5-5 in their last 10. The team that has totally played themselves out of it are the Twins. They're 1-9 in their last 10. They were right there.
Yeah.
Now they were 36-31. Now they're 37-40.
I mean, if you look at it, Chief, the people that are 10, 12 games back still have a chance.
Yeah.
If you're the White Sox and you're 23.5 back, your chances are not. You still have a chance, but not a great one.
Well, you got to go 9-1 to catch up, but it's hard to do.
Very true.
Well, the Astros are alive in the West, ahead of the Mariners, even though the Mariners just beat the Cubs in a series. But the Astros were 7-3 their last 10, and they're pretty much way up. The Athletics are at the bottom, are not as bad as they were, 32-48. If you go over to the National League, we've got. You know, it's kind of interesting stuff. Once in a while, we should go through this. Phillies are 47-31, just ahead of the Mets. They just completed a series. There's talk about spinning. In the last 10 games, the Phillies are 8-2, and the Mets are 2-8. So the Mets were way ahead last week, and now they're not.
Yeah.
Braves, the Nationals have totally played themselves out, 2-8 in the last 10. You just can't have 10 game sets like that. You just turn your whole season around when you do that. Cubs are still in charge in the Central, but not as much. Only three games up on the Brewers and four in the Cardinals. They got a four-game set against the Cardinals starting tonight. They're 5-5 in their last 10. The Brewers 7-3, so the Brewers are catching up some. The Pirates 3-7, so the Pirates have kind of played themselves out totally. The Dodgers 48-31, the best record in the National League. The Giants are behind them again. Dodgers last 10, 7-3. Giants 4-6. You know, they're both 5-5. The Giants be tied with them. Padres were 4-6. They're 42-35, still in it. You might get both wild card teams, or two of the wild card teams out of the West here.
The West or the Central. That's true. I mean, when you look at it,
Rockies are on a tear. They were 5-5 their last time, but they're still 18-60.
And they're 30 games back. Yeah, 29.5.
That's kind of really something. God, but. NBA last night. Now, Kevin said he might pile in, so we'll see if he does. Talk about the NBA. This is the third series in this year that one of the team's star players went down again, like game 6 or 7, and kind of ruined the whole thing in a lot of people's opinions. And Steph Curry went down. I think they might have won that series if he didn't.
That's possible. I mean, you know, we knew Halliburton was playing hurt. I didn't catch that first quarter when he got hurt, but it's clear from the replay he did something, and when they showed it, you know, after the game, he was on crutches. So, you know, I'll give him effort for at least trying to go in to, play the game as well as he could. I thought it was probably the best Game 7 we've had in a long time because it was chippy, I will agree. But you had two teams that really, you know, played their hearts out.
Well, we might have got not the world's best information. And when he had the calf pull, I don't know if you ever had a calf pull, but it's kind of an interesting injury. It's not something you can't walk around on or anything. It hurts. But it takes a while, and even after you think it's okay, you got to give it like longer. So if he had a calf pull in game 5, he came back and played in game 6, but everything all kind of wrapped up. But when I saw that, I'm going, it couldn't have been a calf pull.
It was Achilles. You can tell that he strained the back of his Achilles on that move, and he went right down.
Yeah, and last night was, now they said it was a. Is it a complete tear? I didn't hear this morning. But if it is, he's out all next year. I mean, that's a...
Yeah.
That's not good.
That is not good.
But anyway, it's I thought it was a good find. I can't believe the amount of contact they're allowing on the dribble. I mean, they talk about the players today, in Jordan's era and Pippen's era, you could, if the guy's dribbling, you could put your hand on him. Now, the reason why you do that is necessarily not, for those that have never played basketball, the reason why you do that is not so you can shove the hell out of the guy, which maybe some people did, but you do that because you can tell which way he's moving. And when the body tenses, you know if he's going left or right. So it makes it easier. But now, they don't allow that, but everybody's just banging into everybody. I mean, the amount of, when they go to try and strip the ball, they just you know, de-pants these guys. They could have fouled everybody out in the first quarter if they wanted to. And then all of a sudden, when they do call a foul, everybody's pissed because, hey, what just happened to me, you know, type of thing. And, you know, bodies all over the place. So,
well, it's true. I mean, there was, Chief, a time where, I forget who it was. He was one of the guys on the Pacers scoring. Came down and clearly did a walk, and SGA barely touched him, and they still called him a foul for it. And
walks are all over the place.
And I admit, the ball steals, yeah, they were letting him play on that. There were a couple, there were clearly fouls, but they were letting him play. I did like the fact that, you know, both teams were diving on the floor trying to get the balls.
If I was, becoming a real conspiracy theorist on his betting, I would say the refs had money in OKC last night. It was a couple of quarters, it was, to me it seemed, it's not like I'm watching a team I care about, I really don't, but when you watch these other, the refereeing is really strange. I mean, baseball, everybody's bitching at the umpire, but these pitchers are so good now, every single ball, not every single one, but it seems like every ball is on the edge. It's got to be really tough to be a plate umpire.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like they're way out or they're way in. They're all kind of right on the edge. And the ones they miss, the ones I talk about all the time, are the ones that are on the other side of the catcher from where the ump is standing. It's really hard to see the one out there. And they don't miss by much. I mean, it's, you know, this width of a ball or something. And, once in a while there's a clunker kind of a... The thing that pisses people off is if all of a sudden you get a high strike and you go, okay, he's calling him high, and then all of a sudden the next time you get a low strike and you're going, wait a minute. But how good is that catcher in Seattle, for God's sake?
He had a great game.
The guy looks like a young Johnny Bench, or maybe better.
Possibly, yes.
I mean, he's a spectacular player, PCA. For those that didn't watch the Cubs this weekend, the wind was blowing out, well, yesterday too, but on Saturday, it had to be gusts of 35, 40 miles an hour. And there were balls all over the place, and the outfielders... The center field, the sun was right in the guy's eyes. No, you know, total high sky, which you don't normally get here. If you have a few clouds, then you get some depth. But if you don't, it's really hard to see the ball or judge it. And PCA missed a couple, which he never does. But when you talk about the wind in Wrigley, and I haven't been to every single park, but I've been to most of them. Not most of them. I've been to maybe half of them. And the thing that sets Wrigley apart is if it's windy, if you look at the back of the stadium, virtually every other field, the back behind the behind the seats, is essentially a wall. It's solid. Where in Wrigley, it's not. Between the first and the second decks is a cyclone fence.
Right.
So wind can actually get through the back of the stadium. So if the wind's blowing out, it makes a much bigger difference there than virtually any other place. Because at Sox Park, or you know whatever you want to call it, or any other place, if the wind's blowing out, if the ball goes up five high enough, it's going to make a difference, right? But if it doesn't, it won't make any difference. Now, if the wind's blowing in, it does make a difference because the stands aren't as high out there, right? So generally, in those kinds of, in most parks, the wind's blowing in, it's a big deal. If it's blowing out, not as much of a deal. Sox or Cubs Park, not so. If it's blowing out, it's just as much as if it's blowing in, right?
That is true.
And I don't know how anybody sat out there for 97 degrees, but the umpire went down and one of the players went down on Saturday. That's not the best. Well, before we get John, we have obviously war news, and we'll talk about that right now. We've got, like I said, the S&Ps are now down 9, NASDAQ down 43. They come back to being up after being down pretty heavy on the opening last night. And now we have gold is actually up. And oil, we'll check the oil. Oil is probably running this thing. Oil's up a buck now. I think it was up 3-something last night and went down to being. It actually was down this morning for a second. But now it's up 74.70 on the West Texas and 78.07 on the Brent. When we have gold, which actually it was just down, is now up. So it's now 5.40. Silver's up 15 cents. So we've had a big change here in the last 20 minutes. We'll try and find out why that is when we go to break, which is in a couple of minutes. Because we have John Flanagan, we're going to talk a little bit about kind of the laws in regarding all this stuff. Talk about some of the news in general and the market. What does the market make of this? We got the VIX up a buck this morning, 21.68. Is it the last couple times Israel has blasted Iran's nuclear stuff was a few years ago, and it was like 12 or 15 years ago they did it, Jimmy.
No, more than that. They went after, actually, it wasn't Iran. They went after Iraq. When Iraq was building a nuclear facility, they bombed it.
I think they did Iran twice, but I could be
wrong.
They
might have done Iran a couple of times.
Then Iran does some stuff, and then it's kind of all over for a while. And now we'll see if this time it is or it isn't. I mean, Iran's pretty wounded between the Houthis and the Hamas and Hezbollah. They all seem like they're in bad shape.
Yeah, but they are kind of fanatical. They're going to want revenge at some point.
Well, sometimes you just can't get revenge, you know? I mean, I don't know if they... I mean, I'm not going to say what are they going to do. They could do a lot of stuff. People could jam people's communications. They have all kinds of crazy stuff that maybe people haven't even thought about. But I don't know that... if they don't, in the question, how much help are they going to get from somebody? The North Koreans or the Chinese or... I think the Russians are kind of tied down. I don't think they want another front.
Well,
how much are the Chinese going to, or if it is one and done and everybody goes to the table and they say, okay, we don't like each other, but let's hang in there for a while. That could happen too. I think that's what we're all hoping, right? Nobody wants a war.
That is true.
Anyway, S&P futures down 7.25, NASDAQ futures down 33. We're going to break here a minute early, and when we come back, we'll have Mr. John Flanagan.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Is your online trading career hit a double bottom with no one to talk strategies with? Are commissions eating up all your profits? You need help. You need PTIProDirect.com. Trade stocks for 1 cent a share, stock options for $1 a contract, all with a $1 minimum per trade for stock and options. That's right, $1, Chuck. And best of all, you get to talk to former option floor traders to fine-tune your trading game plan. So check it out at ptiprodirect.com. That's ptiprodirect.com.
This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend, and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. That's 800-200-6543.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, I don't play Stocks and Jocks. Not tomorrow. We have Jim Waller in studio. We should have Mr. John Flanagan in a minute. We have Matt Byrne on the board, so we're loaded up here this morning. We should have Nancy on later. S&P futures down 7. The futures up 30, down 32. Like I said, last night we opened up down reasonably heavy. Oil up quite a bit, and we came back. We're actually up this morning, and now we're turning the other way again. We have over the Dow's up or down 76. I don't really see any. Well, you see Chevron Texaco up 235. That's an up mover in the Dow, obviously, because oil is up some. XLE is up a buck and a quarter. That's the oil part of the S&P. It's for those that don't know, there's like nine little S&Ps that add up to the big S&P. So if you actually wanted to, I'm not saying you should. We have had people in the past, clients that have done this. You could, like, if you want to put your money in the SPY, but want to overweight oil, you could buy 1,000 S&Ps and buy 1,000 XLEs or the same amount of money XLE on top of that. One-ninth as much, so you, instead of being one-ninth oil, you could be two-tenths oil. Or you do the same thing with the SLV and the healthcare, or you wanted to get in the banking part. So that's what you can do if you want. It's not any kind of recommendation, but there are nine like little spiders that add up to the big spider. Just in case anybody didn't know that, I think most people probably did. Over in Europe, DAX down 109.5%, FTSE down 10.2%. The CAC round down 44.6, so down, but not a lot. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 49, but it's almost unchanged. Hang Seng up 158.7. Shanghai up 21.6. Shanghai actually moved. Wow, they haven't done much. On Friday, S&P was down 13, NASDAQ down 98. Okay, bonds, today we got the 10-year up 2 basis points to 4.39. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.53. Japan up 3 base points, 1.43, so slightly to the upside there in the interest rates, but not much. Oil's up 88 cents. Like I said, it was up like $3 last night, so this isn't much of a move. It traded 37.77 last week, and it's at 74.72. Brent up 90 cents, 77.89. Natural gas up 4 cents, 3.89. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.36. Gold, which actually was down earlier, now is up $6, 33.91. Silver, which was down, is up 13 cents now, to 36.15. Copper down two cents, 480. Foreign exchange, euro, the dollar's up a little bit. The euro is 114.6. That's not much of a move. Same thing with the, now it's up against the pound. The pound is 133.7. Last week it was 135. For more of the move is there. Bitcoin up 2,000, but it got clunked the other day. It's 101.3. It was up at 105 or 106. A lot of stuff there, Matt. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:36 a.m. on June 23rd, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange at 30 minutes, outbound at 40. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Wolf to JB at 23 minutes, outbound at 19. Weather in Chicago, 79 degrees at O'Hare and in Midway. An extreme heat warning is in effect, of course. High of around 97 today. Sunny and breezy tonight. Slight chance of thunderstorms and a low of 75. Meanwhile, similar story down in Phoenix, Arizona. 79 degrees right now today. Extreme warning also in effect for that area. High of 103 and plenty of sunshine. Over to sports, MLB yesterday, White Sox beat the Blue Jays 4-2. Meanwhile, Cubs lost to Mariners 14-6. Sox at home and Cubs away tonight. Sox at 6:40 and Cubs at 6:45. The NBA Finals, Game 7 was last night. Oklahoma City Thunder won the NBA Finals against Pacers. Final score was 103-91. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Well, I mean, they were the best team all year, so once in a while they actually, actually can... That actually happens. I mean, a lot of times it doesn't, but I still don't know. You know, I'm not nothing you can do about it. I'm not big on three stars getting hurt in the playoffs. I mean, we're up to Jimmy. If you go the whole way, what do you play? You play 182 regular season games, and what can you play in the playoffs? 24.
Well, it's 162 regular season.
No, that's baseball. No, basketball.
Basketball, yeah.
It's 82, and then you pay what? Another 22.
Yeah, you're very close to almost, you know, over 100 to 110 games.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot. Especially when it are, of course, the games during the season are nowhere near as rough as these last few.
Mm.
I don't think so. I mean, the ones in November, they know, you know, people know that. We do have Mr. Flanagan.
We do indeed, yeah.
How, Jan, what'd you make of Saturday night? Just in general, I mean, what do you think for the market? Do you think it's a one and done? We hoping it's a one and done. What's your opinion?
Well, time will tell. I'm not going to speculate. I mean, anytime you.
What do you mean? The whole world's speculating. So I think we're trading. They're speculating.
We're not going to target any country's nuclear industry, you know, for destruction. I think you're, you know, in somewhat deep water. So I would not, you know, want that to be an everyday thing. Certainly, it's not as though it's a complete surprise. I mean, this has been bandied around now for years, and this kind of represents a climax of a lot of threats and a lot of, you know, deadlines and so on. I don't know. It's you know, one of those things that can easily have, you know, a whole range of other consequences. I mean, if the Straits of Hormuz closure is, you know, going to do anything, it's probably going to, you know, bring China to the, you know, conference table at some point, because they depend on that for a lot of oil and other countries too. So this has, you know, consequences that probably were understood. I hope they were anyway. So, but it's a lot of balls in the air right now.
A couple of people have ran on TV, of course, not really liking it too much. And criticism seemed to come from two directions. One was a guy who obviously is not a big fan of the administration. Somebody from Northwestern, go figure. But he was saying that all the possible ramifications in his mind have not been very well thought out. And his criticism of the administration was he thinks they don't think a lot of things out. It's the word work could all land. They kind of shoot from the hip a little bit. Now, if it works, then it's really good. But the other guy was a little more, I'll say, more thoughtful. He said that one of the dangers he sees is that it looks like, and it's Trump's first term, he said, who knows what he did, but he actually said one time that he believed Putin's intelligence more than ours. And this guy seems to think that he's kind of being led by the nose here by Netanyahu and their stuff and not really listening to our people to the same extent. I have no idea if that's true, not true. I mean, either way, I hope it works. And, you know, the Rand figures, they just should figure... I don't think they're ever going to like us, but if they, you know, if they go back into a cave for 5 to 10 years and... who knows? There might be a regime change in the time frame. I mean, I don't think anybody plans on invading the place. I mean, that's the thing. What are you prepared to do? If it turns out, I think I mentioned before, I think Israel's done this at least one other time, maybe two, and there was a little bit of response, and all of a sudden, you know, they kind of regrouped. Again, still not liking us, but 5 to 10 years is a long time. You know, It could be a revolution there, probably not, but there could be. I'm hoping that's what happens. Isn't that what I think everybody's hoping here, or not?
Yeah, you know, and I understand that, you know, the suspicion that Israel, you know, put the screws on to get this done, and gave them some wiggle room where they could stand at the side and watch it happen, and not take, you know, a direct hit for having done it. But
well, they don't have the bombs. They don't have those big bombs.
Right, and yet it's, you know, it's one of the problems with an alliance like one we have with Israel, where it's in a flashpoint of the world, no matter how you cut it. There's no way you can get rid of all the tensions there in any kind of clean, easy fashion. That major confrontation and destruction, and, you know, refugee situations like, you know, the world has, you know, gotten used to in a way, unfortunately.
The problem is, John, the people who are the refugees never get used to it.
No, and the problem is the fatigue factor, looking at it from, you know, people in this country, they can barely, you know, understand what's going on there and have no appreciation for, you know, the generations of disruption. It's, you know, we can sit back and pretend it doesn't exist pretty much.
Well, that's, again, I don't know, these are things that, you know, I never can read. I never remember who the hell wrote articles, John, but I remember the substance of it. And there was one I read, and this was more like a pamphlet. It wasn't a book, but it was had to do with the psychology of, like, being a refugee or something. And it had to do with when, I don't know which war it was, where Israel pushed everybody into the Baca Valley. Was that like two wars ago, three wars ago? I mean, that's what happens. People like me who try to keep up don't even keep up, right? So, you know, everybody was in, you know, these refugee camps in the Baca Valley. Now, I don't know if anybody has a job or what, but it got to the point where there were two or three generations there. And they said, okay, you've got people in the U.S., maybe even half the people in Israel, who knows, certainly people in Britain and Germany. You go on with your life, and you're like, oh, yeah, Baca Valley, I remember that one. Yet if you're living there, that's all you think about. Is these guys shoved me here? Whether they, who knows whether they were right or wrong doing that? I mean, I don't remember the detail. All I know is these people shoved me here. My parents are sick. I can't get any health care. By the way, I don't have a job. I'm not eating very well. If I can get my chance, I'm going back to these guys. I mean, if it's you, that's all you think about. And everybody else, I'm not saying that, you know, they're right or wrong or anything like that. I'm just saying that sometimes you have to try and put yourself in the mentality of the other person. I mean, Israel has done a pretty damn good job. I'm still, John, like you, one few things we agree on is we want to be alive 40 years from now when somebody writes the history of that Hamas attack on Israel. Because I think there's something suspicious there. I can't put my finger on it. Stock market moved, sort of like before 9/11. Something's there. You just don't, you know, whatever. We'll someday somebody will find out, you know, but... And then what are you going to do about it? But if it's you, that's all you think about. I mean, okay, Israel's pretty much kicked the crap out of Hamas, and Gaza's smoking ruins. Same thing over Hezbollah, over in Lebanon. And now these guys are wobbling and weaving. And that may not to the same extent, but so much. Okay, now what? You know, Syria, we sort of broke when we broke Iraq. So now what? You've got five countries... And I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong by knocking out Hamas or Hezbollah or bad people. Now what? You got, what's the unemployment rate in young males? If the next group is named the Flanagans and they're some terrorist group, is everybody going to vote for them or not? Probably. I mean, what's their life like? I mean, economically, you can't just leave it here. You've got to figure out a way to make these places somewhere where somebody actually can live. And I don't know if it's not... your responsibility, maybe not a listener's responsibility, not mine, but somewhere along the line, if you don't do anything, if somebody doesn't do something, I hope people aren't stupid enough to 10 years from now when some other group raises up to be shocked. That's where I come from. Like, the job is half done, okay? All right, Hamas is, let's say, 90% gone. Now what? There's people still left in Gaza. Are we going to have some schools? Are we going to have some business? Is there going to be some place for somebody to go to work? If not, what have you really accomplished? You know, other than kill half the place.
Yeah. And just looking at the, you know, confrontation with Iran, it's taken this country 70 years to come sort of clean about our involvement in the overthrow in 1953 of Mossadegh, who had popular support. He was deemed to be unfriendly to the West. So, you know, the CIA fomented a coup, and you know, that's how we get the Shah, who was friendly to the U.S., but, you know, despised in his own country for his, you know, police state, pretty much. Then we get the, you know, the revolt in 79 with the Ayatollah Khomeini, and, you know, his relationship to the U.S., I think, needs further study, too, because I think in some ways...
Well, he was here, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's parallels with Castro that make me, yeah, you know, whatever the U.S. thought was going on there, and of course, you know, the hostage debacle, which, you know, I think was also manipulated in this country for political purposes, too.
It was manipulated by Reagan, for sure.
Yeah, and Bush, and William Casey, people like that.
Bush is behind, let's put it this way, he's a face in everything, including the Kennedy assassination. I'm not saying he did it, but he's the one name through all this crap, isn't he?
Yeah, you pick up any
Bush
rock.
Bush Senior. Yeah. Every rock, there's his face.
But, you know, this is also what we have in Iran now, which by any measurement should be, you know, it was a highly developed country, highly educated. I mean, I knew people, I've worked with people who were from Iran, you know, raised there, were, you know, very Western values, nothing foreign or strange or odd about them in any, you know, way of looking at it. So this is a country you would think you could do business with, and our involvement, you know, a couple steps along the way, just leaving the you know, last, you know, Saturday's events off the table for a minute, we did our best to bungle it pretty much.
I've known five people from Iran. Every one of them has at least one advanced degree.
Yeah.
Is amazingly Western. Kids, parents say jump, the kids say how high. And yet all of them say, well, I can't go back there because they won't let me out. One guy's an engineer, the lady was a computer something, worked for Northwestern, and, you know, it's scary. Well, then you get Fari Hamzi, you know, who's from there. I don't know how. Somehow they put up with it, but they can't go back. They got family, and they'll never get out. You wonder how this happens. But the Ayatollah, didn't he promise Jimmy Carter he wasn't going to become an upstate? And as soon as he got over there, he did. Our people. What was the name of the? I use the term the bullet. Who was the guy from Iraq that had Rumsfeld's ear like nobody from tomorrow? He's almost like a Rasputin kind of guy. And he was dictating the thing. The idea was we were going to essentially parachute him in, and he was going to become the next president of Iraq. And when he went over there, the guys almost strung him up for murder, and he had to leave the country like within 2 days. Who was that guy? We were paying him, a couple hundred grand a year to be in a consult directly to Rumsfeld or something? You know what I'm talking about.
The name escapes me. It was high-profile incident.
Yeah, but he was supposed to take over for Saddam. Well, they didn't want any part of him. I mean,
it was a repeat of what we did with the Shah in Iran.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a history of this, and you know, pick your Central American country of choice with the same kind of, you know, planning, if you can call it that, with disastrous results over the long haul. And maybe there were short-term gains, you know, to corporations or to, you know, a particular party, you know, there or here, but it doesn't, you know, it translates to what I would call a system of careful analysis or, you know, smart management. And yet then you start throwing weapons into the mix, you know, and, you know, an obligation to intervene. And we did this in Guatemala, Dominican Republic, and a bunch of places with, you know, questionable results at best. And we don't seem to learn very much about, you know, the effect of that kind of heavy-handedness. Maybe the direct military confrontation is the better way than sort of this, you know, sub rosa way we do it in a lot of cases. I don't know.
Well, the
or worse, you know, trying to wash our hands of it or doing it in stealth, like you know, fomenting coups and revolts or pretending that we have nothing to do with it.
Well, I have a book at home, and I've been once in a while I start to read it, and then I I'm going to get more back into it. I'm sure there's stuff in there for the show. John Lee gave it to me. It's a history of America's involvement in the Middle East. And it pretty much, we did some stuff with pirates over there years and years ago, but basically it starts with the discovery of oil. People cannot keep their fingers out of the place. Because everybody, as soon as that was discovered, and you've got the territories that were, a lot of them, the borders were done by what? T.S. Lawrence and Winston Churchill, right? And a couple other guys in Britain.
Yep.
The borders aren't so hot. And everybody's all over this. I would never have guessed, if you'd asked me in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where the first oil discovery was over there, I would have said 100% sure of Saudi, but it wasn't. It was Iran, right?
I think so, yeah.
And I was a British guy, and it's, people can't keep their fingers out of the place. One of the reasons, I believe, one of the the things that, we don't we don't do this here, and Carl's always, all over it, wanting to string people up to do the stuff, which is a tad heavy-handed, but he's not that far off in the sense that we don't seem to have any kind of punishment for certain levels of people. I meant somebody who's on the board of some company that just is a bad company, at least saying you can't serve on a board anymore. That's your sentence. I'm not saying you should go to jail or you should be beaten in the street or shot or anything like that. I'm not one of those kind of guys, but at least something that says, recognize, that says, hey, you were an ass, and we're not going to let you be an ass again. Same thing with Blagojevich. If they really thought he was that bad, just say, hey, look, you can't run for office anymore. He didn't have to go to jail, I don't think, because he's no harm to anybody walking down the street. So I think our punishment system here goes from being way too crazed for some people, and for other people, they just walk away because we think we're making examples, but that doesn't work. Somehow it's all screwed up. I don't know why I'm wandering here, but because I always wander. I know that the people on the right can't stand Soros and the people he supported for some of these state's attorneys and stuff. But there is a group of people, Jan, and I don't know that the people on the right can really argue with them that the U.S. has more people incarcerated than any other place in the world. I don't know if it's any other place, but. And by the way, our crime rate's still the worst. So, is it the solution? Some people think it isn't. To just throw people in jail, 5 years from now they get out, no education, no training, no nothing, and guess what? They're back. All of us think that if somebody goes and robs somebody, they should be taken off the street for a while. But if you look at it from another level and say, okay, there's 1.5 million people in jail or wherever in this country, or 1 million, whatever it is. How's that working out? The answer is it isn't. At some level, right? There's a lot of different things you can think of, but everybody's, what I was started to say and then wandered off like a numbskull. After the invasion of Iraq, the second one, which Britain essentially followed our lead, like they have on a couple of occasions, and 3 or 4 years later, of course, it was supposed to be like 1 or 2 years later, they do a government sponsored, I'll use the term post-mortem. What actually happened? Do we make any mistakes? China was news for about 3 hours. It has been hushed up everywhere since. I don't even know, maybe you can find it, I can't. And it was so damning of not only the British themselves, why they listened to our idiots. When I say idiots, I said Rumsfeld, Cheney, all they cared about was splitting up the oil after it was over. They couldn't even, when they were trying to talk war plans with the guys, they'd be sitting there talking about who gets the oil. And on our side, we never do anything like that. We never say, how did we get here? Who made these claims? Who benefited? Who got these contracts? Until we are willing to do something like that, we just keep going on and on with the same robbery happening, the same kind of people acting, the same people getting hurt. Are we ever going to stop this? And it's not this administration. It's every single one for the last 32 years or something. To me, it's, what are we doing here? No wonder people don't have a view of our country like you and I do when we grew up.
No. I can think of, you know, just events and periods that stand out in my own memory of where this country, often with what seemed to be good intentions, did the complete, you know, went the complete disaster. So if you look at the war on poverty with Johnson in the 60s, which had as its goal to transform what was perceived as an underclass in the country that could, if with government, you know, strategized intervention and tons of money, that all of this could be fixed. And of course, what it really did was just solidify a welfare state that kind of destroyed, you know, the African-American family structure. And illegitimacy rates exploded. And that's also creeping into, you know, other strata of the population too since then. But the intention, of course, is very good. But, you know, all it will take is this kind of money and this kind of vision, and we will fix this. And of course, I would say it's disastrous results. Then you take, you know, the crack cocaine explosion in the 80s, which, by everything I can find out about it, was not only, you know, tolerated, but was fomented, you know, as a way of tamping down what was seen as this growth of an underclass that had become non-performing, you know, not productive. And this was a way of just kind of paralyzing them into making them politically inert and making them even more of a basket case for, you know, welfare agencies to try to cope with. Remember how cheap crack cocaine was when it was introduced? It was much, much cheaper than pot or just cocaine. And you know, everything points to, you know, a targeted introduction of this in particular places where it had catastrophic results. Well, then you take the, you know, the opioid explosion, which was done with full, you know, cooperation of pharmaceutical companies and physicians, medical groups, hospitals, everything. And then you add fentanyl to the mix with an open border, you know, to facilitate the introduction of this. So you've got, you know, an ever-growing percentage of the population that is, I think by most measurements, a basket case. And it didn't have to be this way. Things were done to make this happen. And I would like, you know, some of these dots to be connected in the time I've got remaining to live, because I've always felt that this was, that, you know, exactly what was desired at some level.
Well,
and it wasn't just our enemies like China, which it certainly has much to benefit from this, but it was people in this country whose thinking went completely off the radar.
Has anybody, later. Any democracy ever fallen from the outside? It always falls from the inside.
Yeah. I was from the outside, it will capitalize on it and help speed it along, but yeah, I agree.
John, in my lifetime, I mean, we were young. I mean, we were high school, for God's sake, but we had the riots in 68, and after Martin Luther King got killed and Bobby Kennedy, and it was a pretty rough year to be in the U.S. And somewhere a couple of years, my timing on this is a little off, John, but whoever was the then president, I don't know if it was LBJ, it was somebody.
LBJ.
And he there was a guy here in Illinois named Otto Kerner who was, I'm going to say, a pretty brilliant man. And they put him in charge of something called the Kerner Commission. And would it take him 6 months, a year, John, to try and figure out what the hell went wrong with all these riots and everything?
Yeah.
And he came out with, I've never read the document, but I guess it's supposed to be a spectacular document, saying with all the stuff we were doing, just what you were talking about, by the way, all these programs are leading toward a permanent underclass, subclass of people. You know, and it's not just black people. It's people in Appalachia. It's people in down in the South. It's people that are constantly on some kind of dole, no real job, or the jobs are you know, I won't say unskilled, but a lot of stuff they lead to debilitating stuff. I mean, if you've worked in a nursing home for 30 years, I'm going to take a bet, John, you got a bad back. I mean, I don't see how you don't before they had the things that help you get people out of bed and so forth. And but this commission, we came out and the conclusions were, shall we say, like a fart in church, or worse.
Yeah.
And I think that's when he became, and that's what I think that had a lot to do with him coming after him and putting him in jail. His conclusions, and he wouldn't back off, Kerner.
It was so embarrassing to the Democrat strategy and their whole platform. I'm sure this was seen as a betrayal at some level in the party, and this was somebody who seemed to be biting the hand that had fed it. And this was not going to be tolerated. Yeah, I can see that, absolutely.
Well, he was. When you think the only thing I'll do a contrast here because we have some time. I also want to talk to John about some Social Security stuff because I don't understand any of this crap I'm reading here. But that's another story. We'll be there in a little bit. A lot of stuff that was done in there was a contrasting view here, shall we say. Lyndon Johnson came out with this Great Society program. We're going to lift people out of this, and one of them, I think, was pretty much a terrific idea. And the world was different. You had people that were poor, you didn't have anywhere near the kind of gun violence you have now. Because I know none of these drugs. Matter of fact, I'll veer off a bit. But I ran into Eric last night, and Eric's doing good. And Eric May was on the show, and he had some health issues, but now he's doing fine. So I might hopefully have him back on. He's a retired school teacher from Columbia. Teaches writing, and he's written a couple of books about essentially growing up black on the South Side, and they've been pretty critically acclaimed. Anyway, he told me he was a Washington paper, and he was when he got out of journalism school, he was basically a street reporter. I think he told me that he would cover two murders a week. You know, it was a long time ago. He gave me this story, and as soon as either crystal meth or one of those things. What was the one you mentioned earlier? Was it crystal meth? Crack cocaine. Okay. But as soon as one of those hit, the amount of murders jumped to like 12 or 14. He was running from murder to murder, literally. And then there were parts in the country became the distribution center that would move. First it was Jackson, Mississippi, you couldn't live in. Because that was then there was Newark became a spot. And then when the area got so decimated by crime, they moved to a new place. They moved to Elizabeth, New Jersey, right from Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some other place they moved from. Was it Memphis or Nashville? Some place. But this would move from place to place. And somehow or another, we can bomb the crap out of some place halfway around the world with precision. Yet we can't arrest any of these people. I mean, which to me means somebody's included somewhere. But the two different points of view, one being maybe the conservative side, one being the liberal side, was Johnson came out with this program. The only one of those programs that's left, John or Jimmy?
It's Head Start.
Head Start, which is actually now in those days they said, okay, these kids, their family life isn't so hot. Maybe the family isn't even there. Maybe there's no dad. Probably there's no dad. Let's get these kids in some sort of a preschool to get them started for kindergarten, because they land there at age 5 in kindergarten. They're not as far along as other kids from other areas, right? I think that's probably a pretty smart idea, right? And there were all kinds of other stuff. But the joke always was, or the criticism was, if you look at the amount of money that you spent on the Great Society program, divided it by the amount of poor people and sent them a check, you wouldn't have any poor people. Now, of course, there's the moral issues with that. And all of a sudden Johnson's out and Tricky Dick's in. And Tricky Dick comes in with something called a negative income tax, which basically is the total mirror image of what Johnson tried to do. And I, everybody thinks I'm this flaming liberal. I'm not. I mean, in terms of money, I'm probably to the right of Attila the Hun. But I remember reading that, John, the whole thing. And it was actually very well done, where the idea was, okay, if you want to drink beer and sit there in the couch in your wife beater t-shirt and yell at football quarterbacks all day long, go ahead. We'd rather not, but here's a check. You're not in poverty. But it was designed in such a way where if you worked one day a week, they didn't take all your check away. Everything you did was incremental. So if you actually got your ass up and worked one day a week, not saying all these people are lazy, but there are some that are. Get off your ass up and worked in a car wash one day a week and made $80. You didn't have to give the whole 80 back. You got to keep like 40 or something on your or 60 or something. So it actually was pretty well engineered. But now people said, wait a minute, we're not sending a check to somebody who doesn't want to work. So that blew up by the moral hazard the other way. But somewhere in the middle there probably is a solution, John, and I don't think anybody's come up with it since. Have you?
No. They certainly haven't.
And both sides, I mean, it's not just... I don't care which one's liberal, which one's conservative. Obviously, on the liberal side, the risky run is the money gets drained by all the right guys on the way down, and how much of it actually made it to the poor people. I'm going to guess 25%, and I'm probably being generous. Right? Head Start, maybe most of it, but, I mean, somewhere along the line, people's fingers are in the pie, right? Where the Nixon approach was, let's just, if you're poor and I give you $500, or at least for this week, you're not poor, right? You may go blow it on all the wrong stuff. And there's massive moral hazard to that to most people. But the fact is, it might be pretty damn efficient. You know, I don't know right now I think we are in a spot, John, like I've never seen this country. And I look at it, and I'm not coming at this as a liberal or conservative. Unlike, I think, most of the people in government that I watch on both sides of the aisle, John, you and I see people all day long. I look around, God, I go to the store, there's people in their 40s and 50s, they look horrible. I don't see how they can hold it. I don't know what their health is. I don't know what they're taking, what kind of drugs. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they can. I don't see them working 40 hours a week in a factory. I think we're in kind of crummy shape in a lot of places. Now, we have all kinds of great kids and stuff and people, obviously. But I'm not so sure that if you went to one of these homeless shelters, if you had 5,000 jobs tomorrow, how many of those people... I talked to our buddy Dr. Blade, our psychologist. He goes, you might get 10 or 15% that could start a job tomorrow and actually show up and do something. He goes, you're probably weeks away from somebody working 2 to 4 hours a day or something. They probably are all on some kind of drugs, all on some level of malnutrition or something. It's a massive undertaking. In the long run, it's probably worth it, but we don't think that. We think, it's too expensive, but, you know, it's too expensive to train people in jail. How expensive is it to not train people? I mean, who's doing the math on this? And you and I might actually agree that it might be cheaper to actually do it right in the long run. But I don't think anybody's thinking that way, are they?
No. And instead, I mean, the numbers, you know, are so intimidating to people that you've got, you know, credible politicians or somewhat credible politicians saying that, you know, you just reduce or eliminate any kind of stigma or, you know, illegality for things like shoplifting or vagrancy or squatting, any of these things that involve property theft, you know, you can pick the dollar amount before you think it's ready to become a serious problem, and don't even, you know, hassle any of the people who aren't meeting that threshold. But this doesn't fix the problem. All it does is just make it impossible for businesses to operate, because you're building theft into a budget that's already pretty stretched for any store owner, big or small, and expecting this to somehow, you know, still make businesses, you know, competitive and able to survive and to keep people employed and you know, not do damage, you know, to the whole system by not prosecuting crime. So you got a system that's so overloaded by people who are there for whatever kind of offenses. And I know some people say that it's, you know, a lot of it is treatable by mental health professionals and so on, and I don't buy that as a solution, certainly. But then, you know, the opposite side is, let's stop prosecuting people so that they don't get chewed up in the criminal justice system. And now pretty much what you have is a school system that's just an arm of the Department of Corrections. It's just meant to house people and try to keep them off the street, which doesn't do a very good job at that, because there's no truant officers anymore. So you got a complete collapse of any kind of, you know, a system that makes it, you know, there's any kind of price paid for doing things the wrong way or taking unfair advantage of some vulnerable, innocent person by stealing them or shooting them or whatever. And I just don't see that there's any solution to this unless there's a kind of reawakening to how much we've done badly and are paying for up the wazoo to do badly.
Well, everything is a quick fix. On the right, it's throw them in jail and throw away the key. And the left is, well, let's just let them out. I mean, so somewhere in the middle, I think you can get 10, you know, can't have more than 10 or 12 people of you know, a few psychologists, a few criminals, whatever. I think we have some bright people in this country, and it has to start. I mean, I always go, it's one thing about economics or trading, John. You learn everything has to start from the basics. And maybe I learned this most at Pullman. You need a drawing, you need operation sheets, you need the steel, you need this. And one thing follows another. And if it's not all there, nothing works, right? You never end up with a railroad car. Now, somebody has to sit in a room and say, okay, we've got three 17-year-olds and a 16-year-old break into some place. They loot the joint. A couple of them happen to be armed or not. All right, we catch them. Now what? What do we do? None of them have been to school in 3 weeks, or maybe somebody's an A student, which I doubt. Where are we going to put them? Do we want to put them in county with all the older guys that are will teach them even worse tricks? Probably. What is the solution? How do we get, even if we have to spend some money, how do we get this person or persons to spit out of the place in 3 years or 4 years by the time they're 21 with some level of education, some kind of trade, something where they can actually do for a living, realize that there's another way other than taking stuff. And oh, by the way, for the next 80 years, we hope they live, they pay taxes, and pay everybody all back. That to me, is, if you don't look at that solution, and I don't usually say stuff like this, you're an idiot. Because that somehow you have to make that happen, John. And I'm not smart enough to say how you do it, but I know right now, either don't put them in or don't let them out. Neither one of those are the solution, in my opinion. Now, is it going to cost? Yeah, but if you're successful, guy pays taxes the whole rest of his life, right? I mean, I got because my dad died early, young. I had age-dependent children from Social Security. And since tuition was so cheap and my mom remarried, my stepfather never touched that dough. And that paid for my Notre Dame tuition, which, and I'm going to say, why did that guy get that? Well, I'm going to say that's the best investment, one of the best investments the country ever made, right? Like how much taxes I've paid since then, right? I mean, so you have to turn, you people are in are the human capital. It's the same lecture I give on money. Money is capital. You have to pay for use of somebody's money. Human capital is probably the best thing a country has. You have to build human capital, whether it's morals, whether it's schools, because somewhere they have to help other people that can't help themselves and have to pay into the system. Otherwise, the system falls apart. What, on a very basic economic level, how do people not understand that? A lot of people don't. I mean, I know you do, but you got to find a way to turn these people, anybody whose life has been decimated that much by age 16, 17, and you're breaking this sword, I'm going to say out of 100 of guys like that, and there might be some girls in there too, but I'm going to say 50% of them are relatively easily turned around. 20%, a bigger struggle, maybe 20, 25% are just bad and no matter what. I mean, there's people that have, you know, five brothers and sisters and four of them are PhDs and one of them's a criminal. I mean, it just happens, right? I mean, it's not everybody's right. So, but I mean, you got to find that out, right? Or else, what are you doing? Just in and out, in and out. Who's the guy before Sheehan? The sheriff.
Well, there was Elrod and...
Might have been Elrod. He was on one of those... I think it was Elrod. He was on one of these... you know, Saturday morning things as I'm driving south to see my mom for breakfast. And something about, he goes, the average, what the hell did he say? The average something, was it? Reading level of somebody in county jail was sixth grade. And he says, okay, they served their 3 years, we let them out. Where the hell are they going to work, and why are we shocked they come back? He goes, there needs to be some semblance of school here, there needs to be a auto mechanic school, there needs to be reading classes, that you got to learn how to read a drawing if you're ever going to work in a factory, because we should be doing all that. We're not doing any of it, and we're stunned when they come back. Well, why are people that dumb? I mean, collectively, nobody's dumb individually, but I mean, why?
Well, and of course the problem now, Tom, is people coming out of high school are reading at lower than a sixth grade level.
That's even crazier.
And you know, this is something I sort of feared, because I could see the long term consequences of this, just, you know, kind of turning away from looking at what's really going on in the community college system where I taught. And I began to see that my role primarily, as I got, came closer to retirement, I could see that it was my job was really to kind of fix the terrible job that had been done to students before they ever got to community college. And this was something I saw, progressively get worse after like 2000, where the ball had been dropped so severely in elementary schools and high schools that the last sort of lifesaver you throw out to somebody was in the community college system, which was not free, but it was open enrollment, and it, your skill level didn't matter as far as how getting into it. You put it at a different level if you couldn't read at what was considered college level. So there was some way you could get instruction, but it was fighting an uphill battle because the schools were turning out more and more people who lacked the skills that they once had. And of course, I think my community college now has half the enrollment it did when I retired.
Are you supposed to have a college degree to go to a junior college, community college?
Well, yeah, high school diploma. There were dual enrollment programs where high school students could take credit.
Well, I don't mean that. I'm saying if I just walked up and wanted to enroll, I'm supposed to have completed high school, right?
Yeah. And there were all sorts of other tracks. There was an adult education. There was, ESL classes. There were, life classes, on home ec kind of stuff. Some of it was non-credit. It was very cheap. And if you were, I think, age 62 or over, you didn't pay anything to take some of those classes. And that might have gone for every class at my community college, even for credit. So it wasn't that they didn't make it easy or attractive for people to take classes. I think the real problem, and I see it as only probably having gotten worse since I was there, is that there's an ever-growing body of people coming out of the school systems below community college or university that are more untrained and unskilled than ever.
John, I think the attitude is they don't need to know how to do it. I mean, Eric, we didn't talk about it last night, but when I used to see him all the time, he did teach creative writing at Columbia. He says that I spend the first 2 weeks of every semester on punctuation.
Yeah.
And what the hell?
Well, and also, I spent more time than I would have wanted to on word processing, an introduction to Microsoft Word. In any kind of writing class, where they had to turn in, finished typed essays, I spent time in every class period talking about how to make your document look presentable. And, I put it up on the display and have a computer terminal and illustrate how you could format a document. I mean, just kind of basic stuff. It's stuff I kind of learned on my own. I never took a class. I took classes in programming, when I was in high school and college, but I never took a word processing class. And they offered those. And some of them were full 4 credits, some of them weren't. But I spent a lot of time doing that kind of stuff too. In addition to grammar, what's a subject? What's a verb? What are the parts of speech? All of the stuff that had been just somehow missed in elementary school and in high school, and a lot of my students in shocking numbers. So I always felt like writing is, something that involves a lot of technology today that it didn't when you just had a piece of paper given to you and a pencil and were told to write an essay. It turned into something else where there was all sorts of other instruction involved in the final product looking nice, but the other stuff was being completely ignored as far as how do you make a sentence.
Yeah, I don't get any of that stuff. Why are we...
I can sympathize completely with what Eric...
You've got somebody in your classroom for 6 hours for 15 years. What are you doing? Have people read stuff. Have them answer some questions on it. Discuss it. Go on to the next thing. Let's shift gears a little bit because we've got 10 minutes here before Nancy comes in. Some of my discussions with people regarding, this administration is. Like it or lump, but they manage to push everybody on this everybody's not a citizen is somehow an enemy, type of thing. And you know, I don't buy that. If somebody is a crook and swam across the river, yeah, let's get them the hell out of here. But I'm with that part. And maybe we should have a better border control and those kinds of things. I'm not going to debate that. But somehow it's morphed into, it's kind of let me take a minute to say on this, is that if you were to go back and talk about, and we have people on the show that do this, and it's part of the flashpoints between me and some of our people, John, is that, you know, everybody's against anybody, well, let's put it this way, some of the people on the show are a hell of a lot smarter than me in a lot of areas, but the one spot I think I have more knowledge of is that it's not what you say, it's what people hear. And maybe it's because I'm in a regulated industry or whatever, and there are a lot of people say, you know, Trump never said this, or if you listen to somebody else explain it on Face the Nation or something, that's not what they meant. I don't give a crap what they meant, what they thought they meant. I know what people hear, John, and you know, I say this because, I mean, you know, we're having an audit from FINRA. FINRA is going to listen to 20 hours of the show to make sure I didn't screw up on the air. Like really, we're paying people to do that? But you can do stuff like, I'll give you an example. We used to have a guy when John and I were on the score that came on from the Wine Discount Center, which is now VIN, Jim Buckley, terrific guy, and he would come in and he would talk about some certain wine and blah blah blah. This one's from Italy and it's a great Chianti, but it's from a different area, but it's just as good, and it's, you know, $12 a bottle instead of 20 or something. Once in a great while, I'd say something like, "Gee, you know, Jim, that one you mentioned last week, I had some people over Sunday night, and by the way, I bought 3 or 4 bottles. They drained them. They loved the stuff." And everybody knew I wasn't a wine. I never once said, "Go buy the crap." I never once said it was terrific wine. I just said I had some people over and they got smashed on it. He called me one day and he goes, "Chief, you do realize that every time you say that, we sell out the next day." I never intended that, but it's not what I said. It's what people hear. And I know if you were to say, "Hey, Chief, what do you think about IBM?" Now, you know, like the plague, I avoid giving any kind of recommendation on the show because I don't know. But if I said something like, you know, they've been a strong performer this year. They seem to have gotten this AI a little more than anybody ever thought. By the way, the chief executive they just hired was my buddy John Flanagan's roommate. And everything the guy did from a lemonade stand when he was 5 years old till now, he's been a success at. You know, the company seems okay to me. I never said buy it. I never said it was cheap here. I guarantee you somebody's going to say I gave a recommendation on IBM.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely guarantee you. But anyway, we start talking about, you know, what the rights are of non-citizens. And there's something like 40 million people in this country that aren't citizens. It's 13% of the population. Now, some of them swam over and are crooks and we want to have them back. Now, there's some number there. I don't know what it is. But a real bleep load of these people are people that maybe came here on a student visa 35 years ago, never went back, have a Social Security card, have a job, have a bank account, have a house. There's people that are in the armed forces that have been honorably discharged and aren't. This whole mess of people that are here, I don't know why they're not citizens yet. I don't know what. But now it comes down to, somebody was telling me last week, "Well, they don't deserve Social Security." And I went, wait a minute. They've been paying into it for 30 years. How do they not deserve it? Well, they shouldn't get any Medicare. Why should they be Medicare? They're not citizens. Because they've paid their Medicare for 40 more than you have, you idiot. But you know what? It's not the way. So actually, I dug on here, and the biggest crook, I mean, you guys think I'm, you know, kind of pro. The biggest crook in all this is always the government, right? There's people way back when I started down here, the guys who owned the restaurants, had a Social Security card and the numbers were all ones or something, or all zeros. It's a fake card. Well, guess what? Restaurants are sending the Social Security money in. Nobody from the Social Security ever called and said, "Hey, John, we know you run X Cafe. You got some guy here. He doesn't really have his Social Security card. You better fire his ass." They just took the dough, right?
Right.
Knowing they're never going to have to pay it out. But I look here on this. Now, here's the site I'm on. has to do with Social Security Spotlight on Social Security benefits for non-citizens. A non-citizen, also called an alien for immigration purposes, may be eligible for supplemental security income, Social Security, if she or meets the requirements of the laws for non-citizens that went into effect in August of 1996. Most non-citizens must meet two requirements to be potentially able to... We're talking about people that paid in, right? They must be a qualified alien category, whatever that is, meet a condition that allows qualified aliens to get ESSA. Who is a qualified alien? Jan? I'll send this to you maybe next week. Lawfully admitted for permanent residence in the U.S., which includes Amerasian immigrant as defined in PL 100 to 202, with a class of admission AM1 through AM8. What in God's name is that?
If somebody has bypassed the naturalization process completely so that you don't, apply for citizenship at any point during your residency here, you're considered a foreign worker, because that's what you are, whatever your nationality is, you're not changing that status, nor do I think a lot of people coming into the country have any desire to do that. I mean, that's one of the problems with the way the border was treated as it was, and it resulted in a culture where citizenship was something you dodged rather than something you embraced. So now we have a lot of people who, for whatever reason, want to keep their options open and get back to their home country whenever convenient. And even the ones, Tom, that are here and are working and paying taxes and everything else, they can do what they want with their money. It's their money, you work for it. But when you've got enough, remittances going back to Mexico so that it exceeds their revenue from their oil sales, there's something wrong.
Well,
That money isn't being spent in this country. It isn't going into anybody's business.
But no matter what, Jen, the government's getting their cut. They're getting theirs. How would you like it if you paid into...
Yeah, but do we want more of those people in our local business environments where they don't spend money at the place they nearby where they live, and it's going to a foreign country? Is this why we are paying wages?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons. Actually, one of the gentlemen I know, I've known for a while, for some reason, the father, who is a U.S. citizen, went back, wanted to live in Mexico when he retired. Well, he's had some health problems. And all the sons up here, who are all citizens, and pay Social Security and pay everything else, the dad could come up here and get Medicare, but he doesn't. So all the brothers, whenever he has a procedure, they send money down to pay for his health care. Now, you can't do that? It's your dough. You earned it. If you give it to your parent, that's not okay?
I'm saying that there's a real problem with that amount of money going, not just for medical care, but for wages that are deeply depressed in Mexico and other countries, and we're subsubsidizing their economies with our payouts in our payrolls.
It's kind of a separate subject. If the person,
but it's overwhelmed the system, I think, Tom, to enough of an extent now.
You sound like you have a restaurant you just closed or something because you didn't have enough people.
Well, this is. Or if we got enough people who can travel freely between two countries, neither one of which they seem
I guarantee a person sending it back would much rather be spending it here like you and I do. And hopefully... Would you really rather send half your check to your brother in Ireland than spend it yourself?
Well, it depends what the goal is, Tom. If it's to become an established part of this country and swear allegiance to it, I don't think you would be doing that.
Well, I'm just trying to go through the numbers. I'm saying there's a system that they seem to want everybody to pay in, and they're kind of choosy. It's like a regular insurance company, right? Yeah. But how do you know that there's... When DOGE went into Social Security, they should have come out and said the biggest crook here is Social Security. Taking stuff from people they know they're never going to pay it back. We have a lot of people in this country that say that's cool, and then I have to pay less. I'm just saying who. But I'm reading this list. Here's one for you, Mr. Attorney. Deportation is being withheld under Section 243H of the INA as in effect before April 97, or removal being held under Section 24B3 of the INA. Does anybody know what any of this stuff means?
I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I hope somebody. A lot of effort went into writing that. And, you know, whether it's being enforced or is enforceable, or if there's an industry now in making it unenforceable because you got people with enough identities, social security cards, where it's an endless chase trying to find who these people are. That's I don't think citizenship is that onerous a task, Tom.
You know, it must be though, John. It must be.
No, I think it's clearly a case where not being a citizen gives you greater freedom.
I'll tell you money. What. I happen to know a Polish cleaning lady who did everything. She even like married some guy here once, trying to get her citizen that way, and somehow she didn't get it there either. She still doesn't have it.
Well, there's a lot of fraudulent marriages just to do that too.
Well, but I'm saying she has no intention of ever leaving. She's been paying Social Security since day one. She's got a bank account.
I'm not saying these people don't want to leave. They just don't want to become citizens.
I'm saying somehow or another it must be more difficult than it seems. I mean, we have to get somebody on that maybe knows more about this. Anyway, we've gone from being way down to up to being down to now we're absolutely on a flat line. S&P futures down a buck. NASDAQ futures up a buck. So it doesn't any flatter than that. We'll be right back with Nancy.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Right now. You know I love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust! It wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. For those that don't know where that came from, John Belushi from the Blues Brothers. And I think it's sort of like John Flanagan. He likes doing that too. It's never my fault. We'll do it real quick here. S&P futures up 1, NASDAQ futures up 12 as we're bouncing around the flat line as the world tries to make out where I think the world is hoping what I'm hoping. It's a one and done. We'll see. There seems to be some history behind that. We'll see if it plays out that way. Anyway, let's go through real quick because there's not much moving around. Europe's down a little bit. Gold is now was up, now it's down. So as the market goes up, gold and oil go down, and when the market comes back down, oil and gold go up. So it's kind of a crazy morning. But DAX down 125.5%, FTSE down 17.2. We have gold is up now down 888. A little bit just an hour ago was up 880, and we've got oil was only up 8 cents in this last now, and I think it was up like 3-something last night. Do we have Nancy?
We do indeed.
Yes, we do.
Nance, how are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. Are you staying cool?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Are you guys?
Well, hopefully my man, Furnace Freddy's showing up this afternoon to fix my AC.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. How did you manage last night, Tom?
You know what? It wasn't all that bad. I got a ceiling fan. It's okay. I mean, it got to be like 82 in the place. It wasn't 90 or anything like that. So it was all right. But, you know, it's not. We used to do this all the time, you know. I mean, this is not like it's. I mean, I always define true love, Nance, as those old houses without even a ceiling fan, no air conditioning, and a double bed. That has to be true love, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but then he had summer sheets and summer blankets, and windows were open. And
yeah, you had that stuff. You didn't have to have bars on your windows and stuff. But I always tell a story about in Arm & Hammer by Arm & Hammer in New York. Everybody lived in those, you know, those flat roof buildings that if you don't have any insulation, the heat builds up in the attic area. And actually, it's actually a lot hotter in the apartments at night than it was during the day, even with the windows open. So people, they would sleep on the fire escape. A kid per step and the parents on the landing.
We used to sleep in the basement.
That's a little less dangerous than a fire escape.
Well, this is true, but
the noise of the city below you, right?
Well, the room I'm sitting in here was a sleeping porch when this place was built in the 20s. And then it was enclosed in the 50s by the former owner, and heat was put in and windows and everything. Before that, it was like a little side room off in the back bedroom that was screened, or some of them weren't screened, but you'd sleep out there in the hot weather.
Yeah.
And you were totally private, always at the back of the house. Nobody could see you. So.
Well, you do get used to it to a huge extent. And also, I think the population probably averaged 40 pounds less, which helps as well, right? I mean, you couldn't.
Oh my goodness, 40 pounds less.
Well, I mean, it's even you see the two people. Well, the umpire wasn't big, but the average person playing Major League Baseball now, I think, is 20 pounds heavier than they were 30 years ago. Maybe with all the weights and all the other stuff. I mean, that's what.
Oh yeah.
People are just heavier. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's just I'm not making a value judgment. I'm just, but I mean, can you imagine working all day and like. The back of the yards or a factory. No, the factory's in the air conditioning. Pullman wasn't air conditioned.
The schools weren't even air conditioned.
No school was air conditioned at all.
I remember going to grad school. I did a summer on the 190 program. The deal with the University of Chicago was they give you a discount if you went during the summer because they must not have enough people. So I took two classes in the summer and I took four of my next two quarters on campus. I actually graduated in April and I saved $1,000 by doing that. You know, it doesn't sound like much, but back then it was when the total tuition was, I think I paid $5,000 for my MBA, maybe $5,500. And now a single course is what, John? $7,000?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so my entire MBA was less than a course today. That's scary, isn't it, Nance?
It is.
I don't think the CPI is up 20 times since 1976. I bet it's up 4 times.
I think it's at Marquette. It's 2,000. They told me a credit hour.
So that's $8,000 a course. If it's a 4 or 6 grand.
Yeah, it could be 3 or 4. I mean, I don't know how that, you know. But
what's going on in your world? While I dig up the CPI number here.
Hey, wait! I got a question for you. You said that when I was listening, I got on about 7:10. That you're hoping this is a one and done, and that's what history says.
Israel has. At least one other time, and I'm thinking two, has gotten pissed off at Iran and went in and bombed either a nuclear facility or something else. They did, I forget what the other one was, and both times Iran did, you know, somewhat of a response, and then it kind of all sort of blew over and didn't happen again for 5 or 10 years. So it was kind of something that kind of slapped them back into the corner a little bit, for lack of a better term. And it wasn't like they liked each other or anything, but it took a while for Iran to recover. Not that they hated him any less, or us. And now it seems like they're losing on all fronts. You wonder if they're... I mean, I think the thought is they're going to hunker back down. They're not going to like us, but they're just going to stop doing what they're doing for a while because they've been pretty much smashed in every corner.
Have they responded to this yet?
Well, they've been lobbing those missiles over. They've been doing that the whole time, Israel. They haven't responded to this specifically. I don't know how many missiles they got left. I don't know how far they I think their furthest one they have, it can go, what, 2,500 miles down? They got some of those, and some that go 1,800, and the rest are kind of enhanced scuds.
They've threatened U.S. military bases in the area. I mean, that's saying.
They don't have a missile that can put... They don't have a guided missile, Nance, I don't think. You know, where they can say, okay, we're aiming it towards Chicago, we put it up in the air, and it's ballistic. And when you stop powering it, when it gets to its height, then it's just kind of in the free, it's like a mortar or like a bullet. There's no guidance that you can say, oh no, the wind's got you going north of Chicago and guide the thing back. They don't have anything like that. They don't have anything in the air that can guide it. They don't have a satellite that can guide it. So it's not surprising when they lob one up, they're liable as much to land on your or my head as they are the American base. They have a lot of them, you know. So, but I mean, yeah, there'll be some kind of response. But I'm saying, a couple of times this has happened before, it kind of just deadened the whole thing out for a while, didn't it, John?
I think
that's what, when as the Pete Hegseth came out and he said we're not at war with Iran, we're at war with their nuclear thing. Now, if people believe that and Iran, I don't know how much they got left, John, and I don't think they're getting much help from their guys. This is my hope, anyway, and I think this is what the mentality of the administration is, isn't it, John? That's it, you know, and hopefully that's it. Isn't that where we're at? Hopefully.
Yeah, and I mean, it resets the clock. I mean, I doubt if this is going to stop Iran from, you know, proceeding at some point in the future to try to replace this or, you know, do with somebody else's assistance, but it does kind of reset the counter on it.
So, I mean, that's where okay, a dollar in 1976 is worth $5.78 today, so it should be up five times. And actually, it's sort of about right. Of course, most of that I think was in the early years, in the late 70s, when it was up 10% and 12% along the way. So yeah, that's not as much as you would think. But there you go. That's in the CPI calculator.
Well, I have another question then. When they first started bombing, the market really tanked, right?
Last night, yeah.
Okay, the market really tanked. I mean, just within the past couple of weeks, though. Within the past month or so, yep. There was a prompt start there where it really tanked, and today that it's even. Then the market, are you saying that the market's believing that this could just be the end of it now?
It's certainly what oil was up. Like, I think $3.50 last night instantly, and now it's up like 8 cents or something. So the market is, I think, thinking that they're thinking and hoping what I'm thinking and hoping. So,
okay, so then if people are protesting downtown against Donald Trump and saying he should be impeached, is that just more of a political thing? Or
you're into another totally different area that we talked about earlier in the show. You know, the Constitution says that only Congress can declare war. Well, then there's the War Powers Act, which gives the president some discretion. And now everybody is, whatever they do, they just say it's under that act. You know, it's a war on terror, it's a war on this. The fact is, we haven't had declared war since World War II, right, Jen?
So yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so some people are saying that I don't think we've ever done this, have we, Jen? You know, just went into the side of somebody else. I mean, we clearly...
Well, we did it in Libya. I mean, we did it in...
We've done some stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
But that was the line of death. So we crossed it. The Libyans came in. We shot down their planes. But this is a little different.
Yeah, this, I think, is about... It's always a little different, right? I mean, Iraq, you know, somewhat of the same thing, but that was a debated, you know, invasion for a long time. I think Bush 1 got approval from Congress, not necessarily a declaration of war for Iraq 1, didn't he, John?
Right. I mean, we've had targeted assassinations of Iranian figures. The Israelis have too, and vice versa. So.
Well, you know, I don't... The part that's kind of weird, and this is... I mean, I don't want anybody killing anybody. And I sure as hell don't want anybody here assassinated. Maybe voted out, but not assassinated. But when you have a guy who says... We know where their leader is. I know right where he is, and we haven't decided to take him out. at least not today, but we might. And the next day, someone on the other side says, well, we're coming after you too. Why is somebody shocked at that, John? I mean, duh. I mean, I hope they don't, either one of them. But why would you even bring it up?
This is why I'm asking all these questions, because I'm just so confused. And what is the, I mean, did Kennedy go for Vietnam, or I mean, was that approved? I guess I'm just trying.
No,
to
I'm saying that was a was that a police action, right, Jen?
Jimmy? Well, and then there was the fake attack, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that the House.
Well, that was way past Kennedy.
Yeah, and that was a triggering document that, you know, that was a little different from, I think they knew they had to do something at that point with public, at least ostensibly public support, so they crafted this attack and then, you know, said we had to respond to it appropriately, and, you know, this gave a green light to the escalation of the more significant. So, but that was an attempt to kind of do an end run around a declaration of war, but it did involve the Congress. So.
But that was all well, the Congress, they could at any time, even now, say, okay, you blew off four of your bunker bombs, then we're cutting off the money to the next four. I mean, they could do that, they won't, but I think Nance and Jimmy's maybe a little young too, but back in the whole thing about the Vietnam stuff was, had this huge umbrella of stopping communism wherever it was, and the idea that the, you know, communist North Vietnam was trying to push into South Vietnam. There was something called the domino theory, that, oh man, if we gave them Vietnam, if we let the communists take over Vietnam, Thailand's next, then Cambodia,
Laos,
and oh, by the way, you know, if you draw the line down, it means Australia's next, or Singapore, right, or some other damn place. And that was, so wherever we thought the communists were encroaching, for lack of a better term, and the French just got booted out, right, John? I don't know how long their gap was between the French out and...
55 when the French left.
But we started out with what? Military advisors?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and it became just this...
Chief.
Yeah.
I was watching the Ken Burns thing on it. Most people do not know we had been in Vietnam since World War II. We sent OSI guys in World War II because Ho Chi Minh was fighting the Japanese. We had been in there a lot longer than anyone ever thought. Now, we did have advisors at that point.
When did Vietnam split?
Lots of intelligence, too.
Yeah. You know, when did Vietnam split? Were they always north and south?
No. John was right on that. It wasn't until the Geneva Accords. But under the Geneva Accords, they were supposed to have an election for who was going to win. At that point, that is when the domino effect came in, and we backed the guy from the South Vietnamese, who was supposedly Catholic, Buddhist, to go, because we were afraid that Ho Chi Minh was going to win. He had defeated the French, he had defeated the Japanese. There was the thought that if that happened, yes, most of Southeast Asia would fall to communism. And it was kind of funny because Ho Chi Minh, when he defeated the Japanese, you know who he quoted? Thomas Jefferson.
I was going to say Washington.
No, it was Thomas Jefferson, actually. He quoted him in a speech. And the funniest is that we were a colony who overthrew our masters, and yet we allowed the French back in, and it was very clear when we had advisors that we knew the French couldn't do it.
Yeah, but some people make money all the way. Nancy, you go through this history, it's almost like it's like you're reading a cartoon. I mean, the mistakes and the bumps along the way, because you're always covering your ass for what you did a year before, right, John?
Yeah.
And so when did North and South become North and South, I guess, my question.
55-56.
So then now all of a sudden Ho Chi Minh is now an enemy.
Correct.
Because now he's...
Well, and he was perceived to have Chinese backing, too. That, you know, the Chinese were... It's not like what happened in Korea, too. Very similar.
Cuba.
He did. He did to beat the French. Then when China was in their war, Mao kind of told him, hey, I can't support you anymore. Russia also was, the Soviet Union was, but they were having problems. This is 1956, so, you know, they had the Hungarian problem, so they kind of backed them out. So they were like, well, you know what, you got to settle for half the country. And that was the thing. And then we, unfortunately, reneged on the deal, saying, well, this guy's going to win the South. And we, as usual, backed the wrong person, but we can't leave too early.
Yeah.
And not until 1975. But it was interesting. And yet, it never happened.
Well, anyway, Nancy,
you know, Thailand never fell.
So, Nance, on this CPI number, I was kind of wrong on this. If you looked at it, the total that I paid was like $5,500. And if you look at that today, that number would be $31,000, and it's more like $120,000.
Yeah, I think it's 20 hours for a master's, maybe?
Yeah, but it's 20 courses at Chicago. At other places, like when Dan, my brother, went to DePaul, he was already a CPA. So he didn't have to take the accounting courses, which mean you only have to take 12 or 13 instead of 20. When they were in Chicago, they would make you take them anywhere. You could take them in medicine if you wanted to, but you couldn't get out of there without paying for 20 courses.
Oh, you're actually taking 20 courses. Okay.
That's how I ended up with all this weird stuff that I know. I took, because I didn't have to take the economics courses, the regular ones. So I took probably 8 courses over in the economics school. That's how I had George Stigler and all those guys. They were in economics. They weren't in business. So I was able to, those were all my electives that I went over there and did all the economics stuff. So I really probably had, you know, I could probably have just gotten a master's in economics, not business. I probably took as many courses over there as I did in business. But that you could take, I could have, you know, somebody like John could have taken the basic 10 or 12 in the business school and taken the other 8 in law school and probably was halfway through your law degree, right, John, if you did that?
Yeah.
So some schools allow you to do that, but other places, I mean, if you're married and you just want to get out with your MBA, you don't say, I'll take another 8 somewhere else. You say, 12, give me the minimum I can take. If they had told me I only had to take 17 or 16, that's all I would have taken. I wouldn't have said, oh, no, I want to do 4 more. I mean, nobody's that crazy, are they?
But that's the quarter system, right, Tom?
Yeah. So you had to take 20 courses. They were quartered. Well, yeah, semesters would be forever if it was 20 of them, right?
No.
Which means you're supposed to take four quarters of 3 and 2 quarters of 4. And they were pretty specific about the courses that were so tough. They said don't take those in the quarters where you're taking 4. Some of the economics or the accounting stuff was ridiculously hard. That's why I decided I didn't want to be an accountant. Yeah, there were some courses they would tell you. I mean, this course is really hard. This one's take this many hours per week, and this will take something other. I mean, they were pretty upfront with it. And the weird part, though, the answer is that Notre Dame, if you had 3 courses in a row on a Monday, when you took your finals, they would spread the finals out. There was finals week. You might have one on Monday morning, next one's Wednesday afternoon. University of Chicago, if you had 3 right in a row, which I always did because I was commuting, you had 3 finals right in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. But anyway, what's going on in your neck of the woods? You guys busy or what are you doing? Any mortgages?
I'm busy this past week or two. I've been busy. God knows why. I mean, just all kinds of different reasons of life. I mean, people just can't wait anymore. They need repairs and they're big. And, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. But trying to find someone the correct avenue for them to go down is getting, you know, tough. I mean, it's not a one word answer anymore.
Well, it's, you know, people want to stay in their 3% mortgage forever, but the average person moves what, every 5 or 6 years? So there's a stress there. We're almost getting to 3 or 4 years or 5 years on some of those mortgages, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday afternoon I got a call and it was very frustrating, a longtime client, and we were just not speaking in the same language, I swear. And finally I said, well, you seem to know what you want to do, and I'm telling you honestly why I wouldn't do this, but, you know, maybe came up with 2 different alternative ideas. And he said, well, you're never like this, you're not fighting me. And I said, look, there would be 0 sense in touching your 2.625% mortgage rate. I mean, it would be it's insanity. So the question is, how to get you extra money without, for what it is you want to do, and without touching that. And I just feel like you're not hearing what I'm saying. And finally, it probably took 2 hours, and we finally talked it through. And then he said, well, stay on the phone while I apply for this online loan. And he said, well, they said this, but they're not giving it to me. And I said, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I don't believe what they're saying. It doesn't make any sense to me. And we finally agreed on coming up with something else. But it's very difficult to have some of these conversations because they've... just being so focused on the end goal of, well, this gets me where I want to be, but I don't really care how much it's going to cost because I'm not going to keep the loan that long. Well, then why do you care what the length of the loan?
So this is a home improvement loan. This isn't a...
He went with the home improvement. I said, this is... Honestly and truthfully, if you just want to borrow money for 6 months or 9 months, this honestly is your best thing. And if you want to give your home for investment... give your home as collateral for a bunch of unsecured loans, right? I just don't see, you know, you have to understand what it is you're doing. That's all I care about, you know? And it finally, we came up with I originally had said I really would just take a line of credit, not worry about how long it lasts. He wanted it to last 30 years. I said, it makes no sense. You can't draw on it for 30 years, so... It's really only for whatever the draw time is. And it turned out the draw time was 5 years, and you only get approved for, let's see, he has 50% equity. He was only going to get approved for $50,000 anyways.
So
it can never go past the $50,000 approval.
So this is not a guy that has a whole bunch of credit card stuff where the average interest with a new mortgage is better. This is a guy who actually sitting there going, we'd really like a new house, but we can't, so we need a new bedroom or a new bathroom.
No, he's bought other investment pieces.
Okay.
And now he's saying he just doesn't have enough. He feels more comfortable if he would have more cash flow, and so he
wouldn't we all?
Yeah, and he just wanted to borrow some so he would have it. I mean, I understand he has a plan on what he's trying to do, but he was so focused on I was going to get a 30-year loan, and I said, I don't care what the thing reads. It's not a 30-year loan. You have 5 years to draw on it. You draw the maximum. Even if you paid it back, you can never go above the 50. And yes, you did have 30 years to pay it back, but it's very deceiving because I said, you're not at a fixed rate. And he kept saying, I am. I said, okay, read it to me again. And I said, where does that tell you that you're at a fixed rate?
So this is a bank loan. This is not something you get through a mortgage.
Right, it's a second loan on your home. It is a mortgage, but it's a second loan where you're not touching the first.
So, Nancy, this would be a home equity line of credit, correct?
Well, it was a home equity line of credit, and he was trying to do it on a...
investment property?
Yes, so they don't call
it... So they only go to 50%. Yeah,
No, $50,000. He has
50%. Oh, only $50,000. Oh, wow.
Yes, he has probably $500,000 worth of equity in this property.
Yes, can you still get a... I mean, say I didn't have enough to do. If I wanted to, you know, if Audrey found a house that fixed up would be worth, you know, X, $400,000, and the thing's in horrible shape, and I can get it for $200,000, or we could get it for $200,000, can you still get the mortgage plus, say, $100,000 loan as a combo loan?
Yes, FHA has their product. But you have to have licensed contractors to do the work. It all has to be submitted and approved up front.
Oh, really? Okay.
So God help you if you can't get it done in that amount of time, money, whatever the restrictions are that they put on it. I mean, it's just not free willy where you get the money and then you get to do it over a long period of time. No. Mm-mm.
Well, so you got to have a license.
Yeah, licensed contractor. They have to submit bills. It's going to have to all be seen, and you don't get the final mortgage until it's done. That's when your rate gets locked in and all this other stuff.
So you can't use jack of all trades. You got to get a license.
No, that's where I see the biggest problem happening. So I just try to let people know, what are you getting into? Because if it doesn't go the way you want it to go, well, then what is your backup plan?
Nance, you and Otter are half psychologists for half these people.
Well, yesterday it was. I was getting frustrated, and I said, we're just not on the same wavelength. We don't have the same thoughts. And I don't know how to get you to hear what you're saying. And maybe I'm not hearing what you're saying, but I know we're not discussing the same thing. And then it was when he finally said, stay on the line. I'm going to apply for this right now. And then that's when he said, well, it's saying that if you must draw the whole 50 up front. He said, and then it's saying when I pay it down, if I have to redraw, I get a new rate. And I said, doesn't that tell you you're not getting a fixed rate loan and it's not going to be paid back over 30 years? If you're getting a line of credit, 30 years has nothing to do with anything. You're paying interest only. It's a balloon note.
Sort of like me talking to a potential client. He wants only winners.
It was very difficult, but I need to get... And I said, and you don't give up a 2.625% rate just because you want to have extra cash on hand. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand what your goal is. And he's very intelligent. And finally he said, I see what you're saying. And I said, so you're making a big deal out of nothing.
Nance, why don't you give us a shameless plug and your phone number.
Okay, my name is Nancy Longgraham, and you can reach me at 708-341-9601. It's just the easiest way, because having these conversations rather than saying I want to take you to take my app, I mean, it's silly. It's just, I just tell you up front.
By the way, have you talked to your friend since yesterday?
No, I haven't. I didn't talk to her the whole weekend. I don't know what happened.
The snake is dead.
Oh, did he come back out?
Well, we're not sure he's the same guy. He looked bigger, but he was hacked to death.
I see. Who did this act?
Audrey.
Oh, wow.
The poodle spotted the snake. Was sitting there all kind of afraid, telling Audrey that's where it was. And she sent me a picture. It looks a little bigger. I think it might have been not the same snake, but I don't want to tell her that. Anyway, the snake, and now she's sending pictures to the rangers, seeing if it was water or whatever those things are, copperheads or something. Water
mics. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so she's convinced the thing was ready to snap and kill everybody. And, she might be right about that. But you'll get the picture, I'm sure, today at some point when you guys talk. But that was the big news. The snake is dead. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I was on the phone when your dog spotted it.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 37. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Nance. Thank you, John. Good job, Matt. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
This is Bob Uecker saying thanks for watching.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at ptisecurities.com. That's ptisecurities.com.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to DACSResearch.net.